Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 88. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for David Todd, who is in New York City still, is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, and I don't know if we're supposed to do the behind the veil thing, but recording this night early, and lots of trades. Aqib Talib goes to the Rams from Denver.
There you go. That goes where? Oh yeah, goes to the Rams from Denver. Probably not surprising. Wade Phillips is the only guy that knows how to probably talk sense to that. Well, you know, before we get in any further, boy, you know how to get me going down a rabbit hole
right away, about 30 seconds into the thing.
I like that dog just throw a stick.
I pretend to throw it. I don't even actually throw it.
Right, exactly. And I there I go chasing after it. There, if I had a tail, I'd probably spend all day chasing it as well. We are recording Thursday night for the sheer fact that, you know, cause it's going to probably kind of make it easier on us for Friday here. Probably not too much is going to happen. In fact, it's right now it's 8 o'clock Eastern time where Alex is at, 5 o'clock where I'm at. Not expecting anything major to happen or anything to happen by the time we would have recorded this Friday morning. But happy Friday to all of you anyway. And now that you've got me off down that rabbit hole, are you surprised one bit that Wade Phillips was able to take basically 4-3, you know, personnel, realistically, and then kind of morph it into what he likes to do as far as a 3-4 goes?
No, I'm not surprised, because Wade Phillips is one of the best, maybe the best defensive coordinator in football. He does a great job of evaluating talent and getting his guys to mold to either the scheme that's current or the scheme that he's working towards and create that transition. But I just think, to the larger point, we've seen a very active, you know, pre-free agency so far. A lot of trades, Michael Bennett going to the Eagles and a couple other moves I'm forgetting. You know, Jarvis Landry could be on the move here soon. So a lot of action, not really expecting the Steelers to be involved in it, but something to watch for around the league purposes.
Do you think Wade Phillips at one point, I mean, he's not that great of a head coach, but man, the guy just, you know, I comment on him on Twitter here and there, especially during the season. I think in past podcasts as well too. It just something about his system and kind of the one gap system that he runs and the verbiage or whatever, that no matter where he goes, it's up and running quickly and it's productive. Now, of course, it doesn't hurt to have guys like Aaron Donald there, but I mean, let's face it. Overall, I mean, they've he's able to get things done over there with his system and the way he introduces it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just an aggressive, free attacking defense that lets his guys go be athletes, and that's something that, you know, Keith Butler's tried to, I think, maybe not emulate specifically to Phillips, but the overall approach. But Phillips has done historically a much better job of it.
And speaking of that Rams defense, I don't know if you saw the graphic I just posted not too long ago, talking about the total front seven pressures and where was St. Louis on this list? I don't have my glasses here right now. Do you see St. Louis?
They are third in the NFL.
There it is. What have I been calling them St. Louis?
it's close enough. Actually, they were tied for second, if we're going to be technical about it.
But. Okay, the Rams, 274 total pressures, tied for second, or I guess, is it tied for second or tied for third if you're in second and you're tied? Whatever.
we're really going on a rabbit hole now, Dave.
We really are, but 274 total pressures there in Wade Phillips' first year with the Rams, and the Steelers, in case you're curious, 34 pressures behind the Rams when it comes to front seven, and the Steelers were 240 was 10th 10th most in the league. Obviously, you know, we talk about sacks and pressures and all like that. I mean, if there's anything that sticks out about this graphic that Pro Football Focus put out about front seven pressures, I think it's the fact that the team that finished tops in the league during the regular season was the Philadelphia Eagles, and they went on to, of course, win the Super Bowl. And the team with the fewest amount of pressures from the front seven was the Cleveland Browns, and they failed to win a single game. So I think that's the thing that stuck out the most to me. Look, we could go game by game and probably break down pressures, and probably the Steelers' better games were against teams like the Browns and some of these other teams. I think the overarching, and look, I mean, you don't want to take away from the 56 sacks that they had last year, but I think the overarching takeaway from what we actually saw versus what the stats say is you just like to see more consistency on a game-by-game basis out of this Steelers defense moving forward. And particularly, I think, from the outside linebacker group more than anything. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, 100%. And I think we've had that discussion time and time again, both on the podcast, Twitter, talking in the comment section, you know, what have you. That's a group that has to get better. And you know, I think it's really interesting you bring up the disparity between, you know, the first, the top pressure team in the Eagles and the team in last place in Cleveland. Not only just the fact of obviously, you know, pressure correlating to success, but how they get that pressure. You know, Philadelphia's a team under Jim Schwartz doesn't blitz a lot. They're going to get pressure from their main pass rushers. Now, a team like Cleveland, I think we were one of the top teams in blitzing last year, and they still didn't get pressure, which is mind-boggling that they failed to do that. But, you know, you look at a team like Philadelphia, a team like Cincinnati, a team like the Rams, you know, they have their key cogs to get pressure. They don't have to blitz a ton. And that's something the Steelers, you know, Tomlin and Butler have talked about for several years now, have tried to emulate. You know, let's get home with four instead of having to bring five and be super creative about it. And we saw Butler reduce his blitz numbers to his, you know, lowest of his tenure in Pittsburgh and, you know, with moderate success. But that's definitely the direction the Steelers want to go in, obviously getting more pressure, getting more consistency, but ensuring that that pressure comes from the front four. And as you said, Dave, specifically, the outside linebackers have to do a better job.
Exactly. All right. Now that I'm climbing back out of that hole,
trying to hit you down with a stick.
Yeah,
knock you
down
it again.
This was not the way I wanted to open the podcast, but all right, we got that unscheduled kind of segment out of the way there. Le'Veon Bell, since the last time we talked, we knew it was probably going to happen. It happened. He received the franchise tag from the Steelers you know, a couple hours prior to the deadline there. He's now scheduled to make $14.544 million in 2018. The Steelers now have until July 16th to work out a long-term deal with him. If not, then he has to wear the tag all year the way he did last year. Now, since then, he's held a Instagram video chat with fans. And he's gone on another show. What was the name of the Outer Box or Out of the Box or something like that with those guys and had an interview with them. He talked a lot about the same things about, you know, how he's taking it upon himself again to save the running back market, how he has a number in mind that he's wanting, and that really that number's him settling for more than what he really wants, because he's, you know, it is Pittsburgh and he wants to remain there. Overall, look, I mean, I commend him for going straight to the fans the way he mm-hmm. did on Instagram. Now, that chat might have been 15 minutes too long than what it needed to be. But, and look, he caught himself a couple of times, I think. I think you saw the real Le'Veon Bell there, to be quite honest with you. But on the flip side, I think he tried to cover his tracks on top of it, saying that, he has no problem playing underneath the franchise tag, that in essence, he's going to be there week one. He's not, you know, as long as he doesn't have a deal, he's not going to show up for OTAs or any of that other stuff, that involuntary stuff. But then he said, will it be week one? Will it be week four? That kind of thing. I think he just added that on there to kind of cover his cover his tracks, you know, if you will. And, you know, he kind of gave a similar type interview, to the what was the name of that show? I'll get Out of Bounds.
Out of Bounds. Yeah, right. You call it Out of the Box. It's an old kids show I watched growing up.
Out of Bounds, and he essentially said a lot of the same things here. Now, I've gone back and I listened to all the pertinent parts of both of those interviews, along with what he told Jeremy Fowler in a recent interview as well. I realize you probably have the gist of both of all three of those as well too. Any takeaways? Has your stance changed? What are your thoughts about the, you know, now the tag's been given and all these interviews have been conducted? Do you have any new stance on the matter?
Not really a new stance. I do appreciate, like you said, Dave, that, you know, his comments on Instagram, and I think it was a great idea to go that route instead of Twitter, because Twitter, with the character limit and lack of body language and context, it's really hard to kind of get your message the way you want to out there. And I thought, to be honest, Bell was saying some dumb stuff on Twitter anyway. He's one tweet about how the Steelers, you know, what more do I got to do to feel wanted, was one of his tweets. And I'm like, dude, you know, you're not gaining sympathy from Steelers fans by trying to play that game. I thought the route he took and the approach he took on Instagram was better. But, for the most part, he said he was going to be there week one. But like you said, there was the one caveat where he said maybe week one, maybe week four. So he's flip-flopping a little bit. But I'm going to assume he's going to be there week one, should a deal not get done. But to your actual question, do I think a deal has a better chance to get done now? I feel the same as before. I feel the same as I felt last year, that it's not going to happen, that Bell is dead set on whatever number he has. He's not going to come off it, and I don't think the Steelers are going to come up enough to get that done. But I saw for Thursday, Dave, you have a nice article about why you think a deal is going to get done, and you want to delve into that some more.
Yeah, and I've been kind of straddling the fence a little bit. I went to one extreme way back, I guess, a year ago, and then back the other way, and now circling back, and I waved at David Todd on the way by, kind of thing. You know, I've been trending a little more to him getting a deal done at some point. Now, I thought there was a decent chance because, and maybe I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt from you know, reading a little bit too much into what he said about the February 20th deadline and how the two sides are further along than they were a year ago, yada, yada, yada. Overall, am I shocked that it came down to him getting the tag this year? No, but going back and listening to everything he said and then reading what he said, you know, told Jeremy Fowler and all, and going back and looking at some pertinent pieces of information. Look, and I know that Le'Veon Bell is his own person, but deep down, I think he's a mama's boy. Okay. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, you want to please mama, you know, because mama, his mother, I'm sure, sacrificed quite a bit for him to get where he's at now. And lo and behold, his mother is a huge Steeler fan way before Le'Veon was drafted. Okay. And his grandfather as well. Now, I think the pressure that he's going to get from his own family, which supposedly his mother wanted him to take that offer that he got last year. I think the pressure this year, combined with several other little factors, I think is going to ultimately result in him signing a deal right before the July 16th deadline. Now, he constantly brings up the fact that Adrian Peterson, and the average yearly value that he got way back in 2011 and Chris Johnson and those deals, that, you know, he doesn't understand why, you know, why those guys, you know, had the huge average yearly values that they had, and now all of a sudden the market has fallen out. Well, the market's fallen out because, you know, those players got released. Okay, there wasn't a continuous situation where people were threatening the number. Okay, Adrian Peterson was one heck of a back during his prime, and that's why he got the money that he got. Chris Johnson was as well to a point, but I think most people will agree Chris Johnson was really not Adrian Peterson. Now, the market behind those guys can consistently, the guys would sign new deals and 2 or 3 years into them, they'd get cut. Okay, so there was constantly that lower end. There was really no middle, if you will, middle ground there. Now, we all know what happened to Adrian Peterson. Now, here's an important thing to remember about Adrian Peterson. I wrote this up in my post as well, too. People look at that deal that he signed, 7 years, $100 million. Well, essentially, that deal was a six-year extension for, what was it, 80? I have this in my article here, stand by. Trying to remember what I had for the new money there, something like 85 million in new money. I'm losing my place here as far as where I have it in my article here, but the fact of the matter is that his average yearly value really came down to over the 14 over the 14 million dollars. So And keep in mind, Adrian Peterson also got he got a $12 million signing bonus as part. Boy, am I missing some of this? I'm trying to find out if I omitted some stuff in this article now that I'm rereading it again.
What did you leave out?
Oh no, I'm looking at the wrong article here. That would play a big factor. So let me back up here and go to my actual article. I was reading the interview from earlier today. I was thinking, I know I put those numbers in here. Back to the point. I should sound like I know what I'm talking about now that I have my numbers back in front of me here. That deal that Adrian Peterson signed had a $12 million signing bonus. $85.28 million of that $100 million deal was new money. So that resulted in him having really, for agent purposes and for bragging purposes, a real APY of 14.213 million dollars. Okay, now that deal also, and I've yet to find, was it true 36 million fully guaranteed? How much, I don't know really if that was, if you go back and read some of the reports, it's kind of framed as 36 million fully guaranteed. And if it was, fine. I mean, it's not unthinkable for that to happen. But the fact of the matter is Peterson stood to earn $40 million in base salary and signing and workout bonuses over the first 3 years of that deal. Now, all right, here we are, of course. What, 6 years past that, talking about 2017, last offseason, Bell told Fowler just the other day that and basically confirmed that he indeed turned down a contract offer from the Steelers last summer that would have paid him $42 million over the first 3 years and would have had an average of $13.3 million over the life of the deal. Now, Peterson's deal, people got to keep in mind, there's like $4 million in incentives in that thing, and I think another $1 million that he could have earned, actually it's $3 million, I think, in rush incentives, and another $1 million that he could have earned with playoff, stuff tied to wins and playoffs and all like that. Here's what I think. Bell knows by now that he's not going to get the kind of guarantees that Adrian Peterson got. I mean, he has to know that by now, right?
But he knows he can get that on the market, which might be his play.
Or does he know? I mean, okay, all right. Let's assume that he thinks that he can get that a year from now.
Yeah. Okay. I think. Let me just ask you this: do you think he can get that on the open market?
Man,
I think he can.
All right. Maybe he can. Okay. But I mean, the cash flow is still okay. Let me ask you this: next year, let's assume that he plays out this year under the tag, has a similar year to what he had this year. Mm-hmm. Is there a team that will pay him $20 million in the first year of his. I think $20 million is reasonable. In other words, first year base salary in 2019 and his signing bonus combined would equal up to $20 million. I think that's believable a year from now.
I agree.
Okay, yep. Now how much more than that?
That's a good question. I couldn't tell, you know the numbers better than I do. I couldn't give you great specifics, but I just know if you have five teams going after the best back in the league, you know, talent rarely comes onto the market. Guys overpay. That's how free agency works. You're going to have teams like the way San Francisco and Cleveland are this year with gobs and gobs of cap space, and, you know, they're going to make a big splash.
All right. Well, let's assume that, I mean, I think teams would be absolutely nuts to give him more than $20 million at signing next year. Now, of course, we don't know what kind of seasons he's going to. I mean, he could blow it out of the water, and obviously, you know, have a much better season than he had this past season. But there's still the fact that going to have to touch the ball another 400 times, yada yada. Okay, here's the gist of what I was trying to get to. Mm-hmm. I think the Steelers have a very fair offer on the table right now, and it's easy to speculate that deal is no lower than the one he turned down last year. Would you agree?
Well, I believe he said, and I forget with who, but he said the Steelers had come up in their offer from last year. I think he told Fowler that.
Okay.
Told somebody that.
All right, and that would be that. I mean, that's believable, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, but I mean, obviously, let's assume instead of $42 million over the first 3 years, it's $45 million. I mean, that's believable, right? Over the first three mm-hmm. years. And let's say that they're going to pay him $18 million this year total in bonus and first year base salary. All right. And that's believable, too, I think. Right. You know, let's say because, look, you could do this thing. You could give him a $6 million base salary and a $12 million signing bonus on a 5 year deal. And what's 12 and six?
18.
All right. $18 million. Yeah. And then it doesn't take you long to get, you second year base salary would have to probably be around $13 or $14 million. And then, you know, do the math to get him to 45 for the cash flow for the first 3 years. That's all very believable what's on the table right now, right?
Sure. Yep, I can get on board.
All right. And it's probably believable that a 5 year deal would probably average, I don't know, throw a number, $15 million?
Yeah, I'm thinking 14 and a half to 15 probably is what it would be.
All right. So what's the problem here?
Hey, that's the $1 million, maybe the $15 million question. I mean, I think it's a great discussion, Dave. And I agree that what Steelers probably have out there, of course, we don't know every single detail, is probably fair. But that doesn't change the reality of if Bell's going to take it or not. And I get the aspect about the family pressure and coming into his senses and wanting to stay in Pittsburgh. And I believe Bell when he says he wants to stay in Pittsburgh. I don't think he has any desire to leave. But, you know, there was apparently the family pressure last year from his mom and his family. He turned that down. Again, my question's always been, what's different this year compared to last year? And I can't find a thing.
Just other than the offer being slightly adjusted upward.
Well, apparently that haven't taken that. He hasn't taken a slightly adjusted offer.
Right. But I think he enjoys, too. Now, hear me out. I think he enjoys this being the spokesperson for the running back class right now. I think he enjoys all that. I would not expect him to do any. I bet he really enjoyed having OTAs off last year. I expect him, regardless of what's going to happen now, I expect him to have OTAs off. I mean, even mm-hmm. if the Steelers offer doesn't budge one bit, he's not going to take it until OTAs are over. I just think, and look, I think it comes all the way back around to this. I don't think he wants to leave Pittsburgh, period.
I don't think so either, but I also don't think he wants to take less than what he feels he's valued. Whether he's right or wrong doesn't matter, but I don't see him coming down to that number. He's been adamant about it.
I think he will come to the realization that the Steelers are treating him fair, and that – because, I mean, look, if he – I mean, it's plain and simple. If he does not get a deal done by July 16th, no way in hell is he going to be in Pittsburgh in 2019.
He's gone.
He is going to be gone. And I think either Didi Bakari or I think somebody's going to put him straight come close to that deadline. And I think he's going to cow down. I think he's going to sign that deal. I think his family's going to put pressure on him. And that's it. I pointed to the fence today.
You did your Babe Ruth. I don't see it, Dave. I don't think it's going to be enough. It didn't work last year. Why is it going to work this year?
I think it is because it's more of a dire situation with him now. And I expect that number to come in like right at around the franchise tag number this year, or $15 million per season. I expect the guaranteed money to put – look, I mean, if they can and that's why I brought up the example of $6 million base salary and $12 million signing bonus, because – you know, technically that'll probably only be, you know, you could guarantee all that, even though the Steelers normally only guarantee the signing bonus in general. But I mean, you're not going to sign a guy and give him $18 million and then cut him, right? So you could do that. And what's $12 million divided by? Hold on a minute. $12 million divided by 5 to get the, that's 2.4. $6 million base salary. His cap number would be $8.4 million on that, and that's almost $6 million less than what his cap number is now on the tag. So. Mark my words, Alex Cazora, you're going to be telling me I was right way back in, well, not so much way back now, but in March. But that's after running all these numbers, looking back at the Peterson contract and just listening to what Le'Veon Bell has had to say in the last, 48 whatever hours, that's the conclusion that I've come to now.
Fair enough, but we can agree that if a deal gets done, it's not going to happen until, like, July 15th, right? Steeler fans, don't hold your breath for a deal happening anytime soon.
It's not going to happen. He's going to miss OTAs.
Yeah.
And he wants to record his music. He wants to play basketball. He wants to do all that. You think he really wants to be at OTAs anyway? No. So he's got a built-in excuse now to not do that.
But these things happen around deadlines, so that's what I'm expecting it to happen, if it does.
Right. I would say July 15th or July 16th. I'm not expecting it to happen a moment sooner than that, but
agreed.
I do think, Alex, I firmly believe now, I've drank all the Kool-Aid, I firmly believe it's going to happen now, so make sure to throw this back up at me on July 16th if it doesn't happen.
Oh, you know I will. I'll be the first one to.
All right. Anything else about Le'Veon Bell?
Not really. I think we've talked about that enough. I'm sure people are tired of hearing about it. Just real quick, I don't know if we want to get into the details too much about AB's contract restructure, but just to be clear, because I've seen a lot of people talk about it, AB is not a hero here. This is not a pay cut. It's a restructure, Dave. You can explain it better than I can, but this is typical. Other Steelers have done it. AB is, it's a good thing to do, but it's not him taking any less money.
Yeah, this is him getting his money guaranteed up front, basically. Yeah. It still should all get paid out over a 17-week payment schedule, just as his regular salary be paid out. But now, look, they can't cut him now. because they just gave it all to him in a signing bonus, and none of this should surprise anybody, because Antonio Brown is a guy that I listed front and center way back immediately after the season ended, when I was doing a salary cap recap of talking about players likely to have their contracts restructured, and Antonio Brown was front and center, and that deal ended up clearing $9.72 million in cap space, and Antonio Brown didn't lose one red cent along the way there. So, yeah. Now, look, they had already restructured defensive end Stephon Tuitt and David DeCastro earlier in the offseason. Those two moves created $13.26 million in salary cap space. I would not be surprised if we hear Alejandro Villanueva contract restructure here any day now, and maybe a guy like Cameron Hayward as well. And it doesn't look like Ben's going to get a new deal prior to his roster bonus being paid. So, you know, probably not going to save cap money that way. And I, you know, I guess they could restructure Ben now with the idea that they're going to roll all that kind of stuff up, you know, into a new contract next year. But, you know, at this point, I wouldn't look for anything to happen with Ben, but it wouldn't surprise me either way, I guess. But yeah, that contract restructure was expected, and you're right. It's not like he should be. You know, people say, Bell, look at Antonio Brown taking one for the team. He took one from the team, all right. he took basically a signing bonus is what he took. So money he was already due. All right, talking about cap cutting measures. You know, here we are. It's Thursday night, basically Friday when people are listening to this. The tampering period, believe it or not, begins Monday, Alex. Monday at around noon, I think, East Coast time. And, of course, the start of the new league year happens on a few days after that, on Wednesday.
14th, yep.
Right, on the 14th. So we're less than a week away, obviously. If the Steelers were going to cut players, you would think they'd cut them by now, right?
Yeah, we've seen that around the league. We've seen the guys start to shed cap. So, you know, we could talk about who's on that list, but I think you had the tweet earlier, and I think that's accurate, that if it's going to happen, I mean, you know, usually these things happen on a Friday, so tomorrow, today would be the day.
Yeah, I will be surprised, because it's not like they have anybody that they have to hold on to cut after the start of the new league year. In other words, to make a the reason, just to explain to folks real quick, the reason people will hold off and cut players after the start of the new league year is that's what they have to do if they want to designate that player as a post June 1st salary cap cut in order to stretch out the dead money over 2 years. The Steelers don't have anybody like that that they're going to need to do that to at all. So, you know, as respect to the player too. I mean, do you really want to cut them in a couple of hours before the start of the new league year? At least give these guys a chance to beat the market rush, right? So
yeah,
that's why I say, you know, if we don't see cuts by Friday, by Friday evening, man, there's a good chance that everybody under contract makes it to the start of the new league year, and you know I'm rooting for that, right?
Well, let's talk about that. So who's all on the chopping block here? We've talked about things before. We got Mike Mitchell, J.J. Wilcox. What do you think's happening with those two guys?
Well, I mean, if there's anybody that's going to be cut, it would have to be J.J. Wilcox, all right? Because, I mean, because of his, you know, base salary that you save and the fact that he's a backup and there's no sign that he's going to be a starter. I mean, that you just can't pay the guy that money. Now, there was a report, I think, by Fowler, three, 4, 5 days ago, saying they want to keep him. They're trying to work him out, working to take a lower number, yada, yada. I mean, unless he's going to take the minimum, I say cut him. That's one name that we could see, I don't know, late, you know, maybe before, by the time we get off this podcast or by Friday night. I mean, why are you going to hold him through the weekend, okay, would be my question. Now, Mike Mitchell's the other one people want run out of town. And as I've caught, look, I have cautioned for several weeks now. I will not be surprised if this goes either way with him. And for those who criticize the heck out of me, for even fathoming that Mike Mitchell would survive past the start of the new league year, I am rooting for that to happen.
And it's possible, because we know that if they cut him, what do they have left?
Right. And my whole theory behind that is basically, look, I mean, you are not guaranteed anything in free agency right now, and you're not guaranteed anything in the draft. So why would you cut your legs off right now, not knowing that you're going to be able to get player X in free agency or player X in the draft?
In the safety group, sorry to cut you off real quick, the safety group in free agency and the draft is not particularly strong. So, you know, it's not like there's a ton of names out there. Yeah, we've heard Trey Boston, but he's going to cost a lot. And beyond that, aren't a whole lot of names out there that really fit.
Right, and Tyrone, you know, people are already talking about Tyrone Matthew. Yeah, I mean, what do you think about that?
I don't.
I don't either. I mean, A, I think even if he is cut, it's going to be too pricey, and B, is it, you know, he's got an injury concern, you know? Mm-hmm. All of that looks good on paper. We can all devise, you know, that, well, we have our mock drafts and guys that we like to target and all like that, but there's no guarantee, so why would you cut your starting free safety now when you don't even know that you're going to be able to, you know, really upgrade from that? And people say, well, any, you know, Alex Cazor would be an upgrade over Mike Mitchell, you know, but I mean,
not true.
You know, that's, and look, but if Mike Mitchell survives the start of new league year, you can still cut him later, folks, you know? Mm-hmm. So, that's the thing. Now, Kevin Colbert, you know, didn't mention the head of the combine, but he almost says it every year that some veterans might not be retained. Okay, so he didn't say it's definite, but look, if you're going to cut, I mean, what do you gain right now to cut from cutting a guy like William Gay, Darius Hayward Bay, who was the other one that I've been throwing in?
Well, you got Cody Sensabaugh.
Cody Sensabaugh. I mean, you don't save enough cap money minus roster displacement to cut those guys right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, because what's the savings? $600,000-$700,000 after displacement?
I mean, it's I don't have it in front of me, Alex.
Yeah, it's not a lot, though. It's under a million or around a million.
Well, I mean, you save a little bit more than that by cutting those guys combined. But,
well, yeah, I'm saying individually, though. I'm talking about one player.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd have to look it up, but I mean, just think of it this way. I mean, it's going to cost, you know, $490,000 for a player to replace that base salary in the top 51. I mean, it's like I forget what I figured out at 3.8 or 4. The players combined, you only save, you know, that amount of money, which isn't a lot.
Yeah, and I don't see him cutting them all at once. Cutting your whole basically leadership group of Gay, defense, DHB on offense.
Right. I mean, Gay. I mean, you want to talk about two leaders, Gay and DHB. Now, no way am I advocating those guys being on the 53 this year, but it's not going to hurt you to carry those guys the rest of the summer, I don't think. And now Cody Sensabaugh, I mean, you're not going to break my heart if you cut him or if you cut Wilcox right now. I don't think Vance McDonald's going to get cut. I mean, who else are we talking here that's under contract that you would even think about, you know, cutting? I mean,
that's it. That's pretty much it, yep.
So if these guys, I can hear it now, if no cuts are made between now and the start of the new year, people are going to be, I'm just looking at my list real quick. I mean, you're not going to cut Joe Hayden, right?
Nope. And Colbert's basically confirmed McDonald and Hayden are staying.
Right. McDonald's not going anywhere. Hayden's not going anywhere. You're not going to cut Ramon Foster. I mean, everybody else are nickel and dime kind of guys. So don't be surprised if we don't have, you know, any cuts to report. You know, J.J. Wilcox could be it, and that could happen tomorrow. We'll see. I mean,
here's my prediction. They'll make two cuts before March 14th. J.J. Wilcox and Cody Sensabaugh. I think those are the two.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if that was it at all.
Yeah. So Sensabaugh, I think they realize the cornerback spot is so loaded. He doesn't have the leadership of Gay. You can go ahead and just let him go. And Wilcox is more of a financial, give you a little flexibility thing.
Right. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, in no way, shape, or form, I think Alex, speak for Alex too, are we advocating that several of these players we talk and survive in to the new league year make it to the 53-man roster?
Yeah, I think DHB could. Gay, probably not. I'd move him to safety just to see, and we'll see what happens when they do at safety. But at least bring him in the summer and the spring and OTA work and stuff like that.
All right, so that's something we'll be on the lookout on Friday. I will be pretty shocked if a move happens over the weekend or on, let's say Monday, because once again, if you're going to cut these guys by now, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's been long decided.
I mean, it's been decided, so. Why not cut them at least before the weekend to give them a head start on the market?
Yeah. What's your prediction, Dave? Who gets cut, if anybody, before March 14th?
Yeah, I'm starting to think that nobody's going to get cut, and if there is a cut, I think it's going to be Wilcox.
Yeah. You think he could get brought back on a, you know, bet minimum close to it deal?
Well, I mean, he If he goes out the door, he's not coming back in it.
You don't think?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. No, I think it was a chance.
I think they tell him, look, you know, you take it down to the minimum right now if you want to stay. That's it.
Yeah. All right. That's true too.
How many times have we seen? I mean, we just normally don't see guys go out the door. I mean, well, what's that old Simpsons animated GIF with the old man walk in, put his hat on?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
No. If Wilcox is cut now, he's not coming back 2 weeks later or anything like that. And look, he might figure that he can at least get $1 million out on the open market. You know.
Yeah, my only thought would be to cut Wilcox, bring him back later, is like maybe a post-draft thing where you take a look at your safety spot and see, let's get an extra depth guy in there and bring him back, because I don't think Wilcox's market's going to be much of anything.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet nothing like that happens. Okay, we'll see, and that's what we're going to be keeping our eyes peeled for on Friday. Okay, we talked about pressures. We talked about Le'Veon Bell. We talked about potential, you know, start of the new league year. We talked about the AB restructure and clearing. And by the way, they are at least underneath the cap right now. So there is that. They technically
by how much? Do you know how much they're under?
Couple. What they were? I don't have it worked out. I'm working on the posts now.
Yeah.
With my numbers, but they're under. It's not a lot, but they are under. I'll have that for folks right at the start of the new league year. I don't want to put anything up too early and then a cut happen and I have to go back and change my work there. But they are under, so technically they don't have to do a damn thing right now if they don't want to. You know,
right.
So let's see, where are we here? The pro day, the Alabama pro day was, what day was it? Thursday. And not overly surprising that the Steelers brought damn near, that must have been a busy flight, right?
Yeah, the whole flight was nothing but Steelers. Five in total, I think.
At least
that we know of.
That we know of. Obviously, Kevin Colbert we spotted. Mike Tomlin we spotted. Keith Butler we spotted. Carl Dunbar we spotted.
That's Olszewski.
Did you spot him?
Yep.
He was. That's five. I didn't see Joey Porter there. Doesn't mean that he wasn't there.
Those were the five that I'm aware of.
I could have swore I saw Danny Smith too. I could have swore I did.
Really? Oh,
I
nice.
Could have swore. I'm gonna have to go back. That you should be able to. That's archived, I think. On I think people can go watch that. And by the way, what a great country we live in.
Yeah.
Stay in mom's basement and watch pro days. Right. Not even
you know how to find Danny Smith is find that chewing gum.
Right. But yeah, it was kind of a far away shot. But I could have sworn he had the jacket on and sand. You know the sandy hair and all. I could have sworn it was him. But I don't know. But we know those guys that we just mentioned were there. Not surprising me as how really. Alabama once again is going to have several players go in the first couple rounds of the draft here, and especially on the defensive side of the football there. And look, I mean, it's been a while since they've drafted an Alabama guy, but this could be the year that it changes.
That's my mindset. And you know, we've got a long ways to go with pro days. You're going to have other events where Colbert and Tomlin and those guys are going to be there. But, you know, we're talking about creating a short list of players. It's largely for me based off of the pro day visits. Those are kind of my guide to knowing who the Steelers are truly interested in. Look at last year, they sent I think five guys to Wisconsin's pro day too, and that included Tomlin, Colbert, Keith Butler, took Watt out to dinner. So if you're looking for that short list, you want to put Rashawn Evans, the inside linebacker, his name on the list. Ronnie Harrison, the safety, his name on the list. You know, I guess you could make an argument for Daron Payne, the big nose tackle. I think it's unlikely, but throw it out there. And then you look at some of the, you know, later round guys, and this is a guy we could talk about, Dave, both you and I talked about this last podcast, Joshua Frazier, who could be a late round nose tackle replacement for Daniel McCullers.
Yeah, and he even tweeted out, you know, not as a, once again, you know, look, the dinners are fun to report, but we don't know all who's at the table sometimes either. Now, he tweeted out that he had dinner with the Steelers, I guess, on Tuesday. I'm losing track of my days here, Alex.
I think it was Wednesday was the
pro day. No, Wednesday was a pro day. So he had
so probably would have been Tuesday. Tuesday
he had the dinner. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And look, we don't know who else. There could have been three or four other kids there, for all we know.
That was with Watt last year. Was Watt and Vince Beagle both went to dinner.
Right, right. So, and normally, I think, Judge, you know, looking back, you know, it's not, you know, it's not, at least, I would bet that at least two Alabama players were at that dinner.
I agree. It probably was not just a potential six-round pick when you have first-rounders staring you in the face.
Exactly. Now, you know, was it, you know, the Harrison? Well, you know, it probably makes no sense to meet with Minka, but who knows? Obviously, Evans and all like that. Will we ever know? I don't know. But and what are I think you and I talked about it recently as well, too, talking about going back on pro day visits there. Ziggy Hood, was that the last one that
they... last one they did not go to a pro day that we know of and drafted in the first round?
Right. So, I mean, pro days is generally a good, if, especially if Colbert's there. I mean, Colbert pretty much has to be there, I think.
Does he? Is that really? Is that?
I'm not sure. It seems that way, but I wouldn't bet on it. You know, so many years of covering this thing kind of cloud my mind there, but look, I mean, that was the first of many pro days to come, and we'll definitely be tracking them there. And Joshua is Frazier is a guy that you and I both included in our first mock drafts. With Carl Dunbar coaching him at Alabama, it's an that's an easy gimme to put on the back end of an early mock draft. Now, will it ultimately come to fruition? We'll see. But it's an easy association to make with a guy like him. Now, it's going to be it. Now, I guess this is where we're going to kind of transition into, now that the combine is over, can we name that first round pick in 10 notes? Are you old enough to remember Name That Tune? You're not, are
over,
you?
Over my head. No idea what you're talking about.
There was a game show. Very popular, boy, 70s and I think on into the 80s, called Name That Tune. And these people would get on there and they almost bid. You know, I can name that tune in 6 notes. And someone would counter back, I could name that tune in 5 notes. And someone would eventually, you know, they get low enough, people would say, dare them to name that tune. And then Kathy Lee Gifford was the one I think that sang on that show or played piano, or anyway, they would play notes and you would literally have 2 or 3 notes to kind of name that tune. So I'm showing my age here and you'd give absolutely rats petunias about that game show. But I bet several of my listeners, our listeners, do know that. Okay. back on a point here. Do you think the draw to this podcast is how easily we go off on tangents?
I think it's for how well prepared and structured it is, Dave. That's
that's not it. all right, Alex, let's see if we can. Is 10 enough?
It's going to change and evolve. I can give you 7 good names right now. I don't know if you want to go ahead first or let me give my 7, but that's what I have.
All right, well, let's rotate. You give me one and we'll rotate. We'll each name 5.
Okay, I'll go with super obvious Justin Reed, safety out of Stanford.
And it's really hard to go against that one. I will go with another fairly easy one, and that would be Rashad Evans of Alabama.
Okay, I'll go the other inside linebacker, Leighton Vander Esch from Boise State.
All right, LVE is another one that's easy to easy to connect. All right, let's see. Boy, we're already running out of names.
No. I got a couple.
hold on here. Justin Bates, the safety out of Wake Forest. Reasonable?
In the first, I've started to watch some tape on him last night. I liked a little bit about his game. That's possible, though, if it fills a need.
All right, your turn.
All right, what I want to go with here, Harold Landry from Boston College. If he falls, I'm not sure if he will, but, man, this guy's going to be a great pass rusher.
Man, I kind of wonder if he's going to be kind of this year's Carl Lawson, you know what I mean?
He tested a lot better for me.
Undersized guy a little bit. But, I mean, look, I went and I've tracked down. Boy, that guy had a lot of sacks, man. Not so much. What did he have last year? Like four?
Six? He got hurt, though. There was
right, and that's what I mean. But if you go back and you start looking at 2016, boy, I mean, he was a four-year player there, right?
Yes, because he was a Senior Bowl invite, didn't go, but he wasn't invited.
Right, right. So, I mean, he's got a slew of sacks. I've got a lot of them tracked down already, and that will, you know how I like to do those sack compilation videos and all. Wow, I'm losing my train of thought here who could be another one here. What about the Sweat kid out of FSU? Is that a little early?
No, I think you had him in your mock, and we'll get in your mock a little bit. In the second, was that you putting him in the second?
Yeah, yeah.
I think he could be first. I think he might go higher just because those measurables are ridiculous the way that he tested. So I haven't seen his tape. I don't know the quality of his game. He's an underclassman, right?
I believe so.
All right, that makes sense on the Steelers profile. So I think you had him in the second. I think he's going to be late first to early mid-second at worst.
All right, and that, you know, people will say that's too early, that's too late, you know, whatever.
Let me give you the first offensive name here, Mike Gesicki, the tight end from Penn State. Now, I don't think that's terribly likely, but if you're going to go an offensive player, I think he's pretty much your guy.
Yeah, I would be
I mean, I'd be surprised, but, you know, we're getting into the seventh, eighth guy.
Yeah, I would definitely be surprised if that ended up happening, but if you're going to draft a tight end in the first round, I think it's him over a guy like Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, I think probably, but I think Hurst they're going to like. I think because he's more of a complete tight end and he's an easier evaluation to make. I have him on my short list as well. Now, the problems with Hurst is that he's an older guy. He's, 24 going on 25. Steelers like to keep it, you know, with the younger guys. But, you know, I think that that's a possibility. Lower chance of Gesicki, but a possibility.
I think the age thing there is just going to be too hard for them to overcome because they like these guys to get to their second contracts.
Now, Gesicki's, I don't know how old Gesicki is, but he's a senior. He was a senior as well.
He'll be almost 20, a little short of 23 by, I think it was by August something, I think.
Yeah, October. He'll be 23 in October.
Right, right.
So he's younger because he didn't take the path that Hurst did playing baseball and all that. But he is a senior, and the Steelers, we know, again, go underclassmen typically.
If you like P-Spark scores, boy, he knocked it out of the ballpark, didn't he?
He probably had one of the best ones ever for a tight end, I'm
150.
Guessing, right? It might be a record. 41 and a half inch vert.
You know, one thing that I want to look at more at is his blocking. You know, I want to look at it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's not terrible. I think it's better than people give him credit for. I mean, he had to do it. He got into a three-point stance, maybe 10 snaps a game, because that offense, like I said, ran through Barkley, and he talked about that at the Senior Bowl. He said people think of me as a big receiver. Well, this was a run-first offense, and we had the best back in the country and a top-five pick. I had the block. So it's not great, but I think it's better than people say. But if Steelers want to fix their red zone offense, which, you know, Rooney's talked about, you know, this past year, he talks about every year. I mean, 41.5-inch vert for a 6'6 tight end, it's a good way to start.
All right. Any other offensive players? What about the wide receiver chart?
Yeah, I just, you know, receiver. I think they could take a receiver starting even early as a second. I mean, I think third becomes a more serious conversation. I don't call it impossible, but I think tight end's more likely than receiver at this point.
And I don't think they're going to take wide receiver in the first round, too. I'll be absolutely shocked that they do. But if there was one, would it be Chark?
I think Chark's up there. I think James Washington from Oklahoma State would be another name.
Yeah, he had a 111.8 P-Spark score. Yeah, I kind of view him more as a second round guy. Any offensive lineman you're willing to add to this list?
Nope, no offensive lineman. I don't consider a running back. I know that gets mocked there all the time, but I don't see the point because you know you're going to have Bell for 2018. Quarterback Heck no. I don't know what the obsession is. I see Lamar Jackson's name everywhere. PFF to put Josh Allen. No, stop it. The only other name I'd put on there at all, and this is defense as well, is Ronnie Harrison from Alabama. I don't know if I'd love that pick, but it makes sense on a lot of levels.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Boy, that Quentin Nelson, I was watching some tape the other day on that guard from Notre Dame. That's
Mahler.
That's my kind of guard right there. Obviously, nobody thinks he's going to fall, but, you know, I kind of look back at him right now, what's going to happen probably in that top 10 and all, and think, could we have a David DeCastro situation happen here, you know?
Nah, I mean, I think not that far.
Boy, that guy is fun to watch on tape, I'll tell you that. Somebody's going to get them a hell of a, you know where he belongs? Probably Green Bay.
Yeah, that makes sense, like a Josh Sitton type.
You know, and that they pick around, what did they pick, like 14th overall? That's where you would think one of those happen. All right, any other edge guy? We talk about Sweat. We talk about Landry. I mean, we don't think Davenport's going to fall, and even if he did, he doesn't fit what, you know. I think teams are going to look at more of just defensive end anyway, and Davenport, and less so as a 3-4 outside line. Bradley Chubb is not going to fall, at least we don't think. No other edges, right? I mean, it's Sweat and Landry probably the two that would have the best shot.
Yeah, I think they have a good shot. You know, Colbert did talk up the outside linebacker group a lot, so I want to delve into it more. You know, I profiled Arden Key from LSU, who before this year was viewed as a potential top five pick, and a lot of things went wrong this past season for him. I think he probably has too many off-the-field problems to go there, but you could throw his name into the mix as well, I suppose.
Any cornerbacks at all? Neither you and I could see that happening, but...
Yeah, I think corner's pretty unlikely. I think it's one of the smallest needs on this team right now.
I do. I think the same way. So basically the three safeties we're talking about, at least we think, and I would have to twist your arm maybe on Jesse Bates, but Justin Reed, Jesse Bates, and Harrison from Alabama, right?
Yeah, for round one, guys, and I'd probably go Reed, Harrison, and then Bates if you have me put them in order. Reed definitely at the top.
All right, now it's going to be interesting to find out, when is it, March the 19th, I think, is the Wake Forest Pro Day. We'll be able to roll it out real quick. And I talked to my buddy Jonathan Jones, who used to write for one of the papers up there. I think he's with, who is he with now? Sports Illustrated, I think. He normally attends all those up those pro days up that way up in the Carolina area, but he told me what did he tell me? He says he'll probably go to the NC State for Chubb. When he was with the Charlotte Observer, he used to go to all of them, but not as much emphasis where he's at right now. So I told him, I said, man, Bake, you know, see if you can get over to Wake, because I think Wake Forest is like an hour and a half from where he's at there. So we'll see. But regardless, we should be able to find out via the Twitter machine or anything else like that whether or not the Steelers are at the Wake Forest Pro Day.
Are there any other big Pro Days that day? I'm going to pull up the list right now.
I thought I looked at that, and I didn't see any. I don't think that stuck out to me.
Yeah, the Wake Forest is the biggest one. My only concern with those guys at not smaller schools, but guys with less prospects is, you know, because Colbert and Tomlin's time are so finite, I think I looked at the list last year. I think Colbert was at something like 8 pro days and Tomlin 7. You know, do you not send those guys out to that pro day because you're only looking for one guy? Would you rather just bring Bates in for a visit that way instead of having to allocate your time to send those guys out for one guy where you can just bring him in for a visit? So I'm just curious how they're going to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, it all goes back to what we said, thinking about the pro day visits, right? I mean, as you said, I mean, March 19th, there's nothing else going. I mean, there's the when did I say the Wake one was?
It's March 13th at 9 a.m.
Did I say March 19th earlier?
Yeah, it's the 13th. Okay. But there's nothing. That's the big one of the day, but I don't know what the other schedule's like. Are they traveling somewhere else for the next day or the previous day? Like, you don't know, free agency? That's right before free agency? Like, I don't know how that's going to work out.
Yeah, March the 14th. I mean, Nebraska, Oklahoma. I'm trying to think when the last
Virginia time. Tech. They go to Virginia Tech. Now, that's close. So you could do both. But with free agency, that happened last year, right? They didn't go to – Who's pro day? They weren't at like Youngstown State because they had like Hightower in for a visit or something.
Was No. Remember, it was the kid that ended up with the Bengals. The edge.
Lawson?
No, the other edge.
Oh, Jordan Willis, Kansas State. Yeah.
Right. Remember, we were wondering, and that they were entertaining Hightower that day.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, I mean, if they go, that's a huge sign. But if they don't, you know, I know that's a big indicator for me. But there are some other factors that could be at play there.
Right. But I, you know, that's why I said let's kind of circle that and watch. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I use my standby interesting to see.
Yeah. There you go. Good qualifier.
Any other pro days? Really, you know, the start of the pro day season. I did find out from but my buddy Mike Kliss from the Denver paper that Mark Bruner was at the Colorado pro day. Probably not overly surprising there.
They had two scouts at Marshall's pro day as well.
Okay, but there's no real big pro days. I mean, the Washington pro day is March the 10th, but normally the Steelers don't go out that far anyway, I don't think, or at least Tomlin and Colbert haven't been that far, I don't think, in forever. I don't see any big. I think the big pro day schedule this year is kind of on the second half. When's the Ohio State pro day? Kind of later in March, I think, this year.
March 22nd.
Yeah, March 20. You can bet they'll probably be. Well, you know what's interesting is the Stanford.
Stanford. Yeah. Right, Stanford, I tweeted that out the other day.
Right. Stanford Pro Day is the same day there. So.
And they're always at Ohio State. So I'm curious.
Right. That's going to be interesting to see as well. Okay. Any other thoughts on our? How many names were we able to name off there?
Well, I had put out my whole list, which is 7. You mentioned. Who else did you mention? Josh Sweat,
Bates,
which is 8.
Sweat.
9. Did you mention anybody else?
I think we almost got to 10, didn't we?
Yeah, 9, 10. And again, we'll see. This can change. You know, again, the pro day is a big indication. Pre-draft visits are going to happen. But, yeah, I'm fairly confident in this group right now.
All right. Shall we close things out? A quick look at my mock draft that I threw up the other day. And I almost went Bates in the first round. But
you had it. I saw you working on it. You totally checked.
Yeah, I want to watch more of them. Is what it is. I've watched a lot of Justin Reed, so I didn't want to mail it in with a guy that I haven't watched thoroughly. So. Justin Reed, I went ahead and went with him. And look, I mean, it's obviously, you put him in your mock draft. We've seen enough of his tape, and boy, he blew it out of the ballpark at the combine there. It makes a lot of sense to put him in there. I want to watch more Bates though mm-hmm. as well too. Let me start this off by saying I knew I wanted to go safety in the first round for the sheer fact that I firmly believe the Steelers are going to address the inside linebacker position early in free agency. Now, obviously, if that doesn't happen, I'm going to open myself back up to thinking about an inside linebacker possibly in the first round. But that's the mentality I went into this thing, is that the Steelers had signed a free agent inside linebacker to a reasonable contract that he's going to start the next couple of years here. All right. Josh Sweat out of Florida State, a guy that I've watched quite a bit of film on. If there's some injury concerns there, I think, with him that need to be looked at. It'd be interesting to see how his medicals go. 142.4 spark score at the combine. A guy that I think needs to work, I think, a little bit against, setting the edge against the run. And probably needs to he played on his feet some, but gonna need some help in that conversion area of dropping some, I think. But the Steelers like those guys, those athletic guys that play on their feet that are productive, and Sweat's that guy. If he even lasts that long, I mean, I think the big thing is, he an end, where's he going to go? Is it going to be the end of the first round? Is it going to be end of the second round? I think that's still open for this discussion. Jannard Avery out of Memphis, I have going in the third round. Very interesting guy. And you and I tracked the measurables, and his measurables jumped out at you off the sheet. And you're like, who the heck is this? How the heck, you know, I miss this guy. Went back and looked at him. Kind of a hybrid linebacker, the way he was used at Memphis, lined up on the edge and off the ball. His size, though, and the way he plays off the ball makes him an inside linebacker at the NFL level, okay? Now, is he going to be a weak inside in a 4-3, or is he going to be a weak inside in a 3-4? I think he can project as both, to be be quite honest with you. He is fun to watch on tape, and his measurables back it up. Now, is he a day one come in, a day one starter? No. And also, there's not enough instances in the three games that I watched of him running with anybody. Now, he will – he's good about off the edge of going out in space and tracking a screen down and those kind of things. But that's where it ends. So this is a guy that I think from the interviews that I've seen and the production that he had at Memphis, I think this guy has the Steelers' eye, and I'll be surprised if they don't. I could really see this kid being brought in for a pre-draft interview, and that's my third-round pick, inside linebacker. Of course, no fourth-round pick. Kalen Ballage out of Arizona State, running back in fifth round. Look, are the Steelers going to draft a running back this year, or are they not? I don't know, but I'll tell you this. Thanks to Daniel, who's done quite a bit of our profiles, running back profiles for us so far this offseason on Steelers Depot, you have so many running backs here that people think are going to go in the second and third round, right? I mean, there's too many running backs to go in the second and third round. So some of these guys have got to fall, I think. And I think Kalen Ballage can be a guy that could potentially slide into the fifth round. And, he kind of fits what the Steelers do. I think he's got some kick return history in him, and I think he's a guy that could potentially play on special teams as a number three running back right out of the chute. So that's why I put him there. Jester Weah, I haven't looked at a ton of speedy kind of Z wide receivers, if you will. So I know a lot about him, working on finishing up a scouting report on him for Steelers Depot. Here's the thing about Weah. He's a bigger body kid. He's not 6'4 big. I think he's 6'2 and a quarter, 211 pounds. He's a physical guy, though. He's a more than willing blocker out on the edge, a combative catch kind of guy. He does have a little bit of a drop history with him, but didn't Sammy Coates as well? Not that that's an endorsement in any way. And I think the other thing that sticks out with me, he's got good balance. You see him get hit and keep his feet. He's able to get yards after the catch. But I think one of the negatives that stick out with him on the film that I watched on Jester Weah, Alex, is I never found myself going, wow, after a catch. One of those wow catches. Right. Maybe he had a few of those. I just couldn't find them, and I can't help but think about going. One of the games I watched was against Vautech, and that was the game at the end where he's rumbling down the field. It was a third down conversion, and it looks like he makes the catch, and he breaks a tackle, and it looks like he's going to go all the way, and he gets hawked down at the 1 yard line.
Yeah, I saw that.
And Pitt lost that game. Mm-hmm. If he scores, they win that game. You can't help but getting that image out of your mind there. Durham Smythe in round 7, tight end out of Notre Dame. You and I tend to think that if the Steelers go tight end later rather than early, it would be more of a blocker than a pass catcher. And Durham Smythe, I think, fits that. Round 7 might be a little bit too late for him. Maybe he's more of a round 5, round 6 guy. I don't know for sure. And then I rounded out my mock with Joshua Frazier out of Alabama, who we've already kind of discussed.
Yeah, I think it's really solid. I really liked it. Of course, we feel similar about Reed in the first. I could see Sweat in the second. I don't want to play the game of will he last, but if he does, it makes sense. Avery, for the Memphis connection alone, they're probably bringing him in just to talk about Memphis football with Keith Butler and Randy Feetner. Ballage, I liked. Way, I don't know a lot about, but, that makes sense from a need and kind of positional value standpoint. Durham Smythe, I love. I've been a big fan of him since well before the Senior Bowl, so that'd be great to get him. you know, I just got to ask. I saw that you had, you know, again, a couple names in your mock. I saw you had Jeff Holland in there. You took out your boy Holland. Was that just, you know, going with Sweat in the second? Is that how kind of that came?
Yeah, it was a round thing. I wanted to have Avery in the third because I think that's where his value ends up at. Okay. And I think I need you. I think I had Avery at second round, but the more I looked at it, and the more kind of trying to build this thing with what, you know, and what is realistic. I mean,
it's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, realistic. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder when you get to these things and what you think might fall. And but in my mind's eye, I could not justify a guy like Avery going in the second round, but I could in the third, late in the third. So I had to shift him to the third round. Holland is a guy that I view as a third or fourth round guy as well. So I couldn't justify putting him in a second, and I wanted an edge. I wanted to get an edge in the first three rounds in this thing as well, too. Because, say what you will about Bud Dupree, but I this team has got to draft an edge that can get after a quarterback this year, I think, in the early rounds. You agree or no?
No, I agree. And you hear Colbert talk about it. He's higher on this edge class. That probably is a fairly strong signal they're going to take one within the top three rounds.
And that's why I had the manipulation that I did and had to watch, you know, had to quickly go and scan through some more Sweat tape and all like that. But that's where the flip-flop came in at right there.
No, I like the mock, though. And, you know, we'll see how this thing evolves. I'm sure it will. But, you know, I feel – I don't know about you. I feel more confident about the direction the Steelers are going to head in, the guys they like at, you know, this point now, this year, than I have in the past years.
Well, I mean, as we know, free agency can change all this in a hurry.
It probably will.
You know, it really can. Here's the thing. I this past week, I crossed over that threshold of – knowing a lot more, knowing a lot of little about a lot of guys.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So you feel, you feel better about your knowledge now?
I know a lot of little about a lot of guys.
Okay.
In other words, I mean, I know about a lot more of these guys now. Now, a lot of these guys, it's impossible to sit here all day when we have duties on the site to watch three games of five guys every game. So, you know, you start off with one, you get distracted, you watch a highlight of another one. And now, you know, and now that we have these combine measurables, and you and I talked about this the other day, sometimes we're forced to work backwards. With these guys, and now I have, you know, that's what I'm able to start doing is say, okay, well, this is a guy I want to quickly drill down this guy. But I am at the stage now where I know a little about a lot of these guys, and I feel a lot more comfortable talking about a lot of them, and I'm going to learn about a lot more of them over the next 50 or so days, too, until the draft.
Yeah, I think it's, 50 days to the day, till the draft, so... You know, we're getting close.
Right. And look, I like that list of 10 that we put together. And let's throw it out to the listeners here over the weekend. Of the guys that Alex and I just named potential first-round Steelers draft picks, send us one that you think we omitted that deserves to be on that list. And you can do that. And if we get enough of them, we'll read them. Either Alex and I will read them on Tuesday or David and I will go, or Alex and I will read them the next time we get together on the show there. So you can do that by sending to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And Alex, for a off-the-cuff kind of, which they all are.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Episode, I think we covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah, we did. Just real quick, just to recap about our list, the list of guys we had, and if I forgot somebody you mentioned, Dave, throw them in there. But Justin Reed, Rashawn Evans, Leighton Vander Esch, Hayden Hurst, Ronnie Harrison, Mike Gesicki, Jesse Bates, Josh Sweat. Did I forget anybody?
How many is that?
I think that's it.
Nine?
And Harold Landry. Harold Landry.
Yeah, Landry you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's it. So that's kind of the short list that we have. Anybody else we throw in there you think should, let us know.
Right. All right. Send that to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. All right, Alex, well, I appreciate your time. And folks, of course, we'll be back either myself and David Todd, or myself and Alex Kozora on Tuesday, right at the start of the new league year, to preview free agency and all that good stuff. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kozora on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.